Today is the 11th of September 2023, and I'm privileged to be speaking to Cliff Brannigan in Havelock North. My name is Judy Shinnick, and Cliff is going to tell us about his life and memories in Hawke's Bay. So, Cliff, I'm wondering if we start off with where you're born, and we'll go from there.
Yes, where I was born and where I lived and where I went to school had a bearing on my life. I was born in Dannevirke. At the outbreak of the war, my father was in Paiau Tour because he was not a professional person. He just had to earn a living the best way he could. And from there we went to Taranaki, to a town called Manaia. And from there we went to a town called Kaponga, right underneath Mount Egmont, a mile from the scenic reserve. From there I went to Paatea, where I was married. And then from there I went to Auckland. And from Auckland we came down to Hawke's Bay in 1971. And have been here ever since. My education had a big bearing on my life. Even primary school, I struck, to me at any rate, not a very good band of teachers. In fact, one was a brute. And I'm talking about when I was 10, when my eldest brother was killed overseas during the war, and I saw him sling a little Maori boy across his stage. And my older brother interfered and told him to stop it. That was the only way that it was stopped.
So this is probably a good time to just ask about your family when you were growing up. So you had some siblings.
My great-grandfather, Patrick Brannigan, came out in the British Army from Ireland and settled in Alfreton. And he was granted land there. And my grandfather died early because he got wet. He was a bridge builder. He got wet, sat in front of the fire without changing his clothes, and developed pneumonia and died in his 50s. But I only knew one of my grandparents ever. And I only ever met her once.
Were they living elsewhere?
Well, I was the youngest of six, and my mother's parents died almost before they were married. And my father's family, they were scattered, put it that way. But they were a well-known name in Dannevirke.
What about your siblings?
I had my eldest brother went to the war and was killed in August 1942. My next brother was in the Navy. He died in his 50s. My sister died of cancer in her 70s. And so did my next sister. And so did my brother when he was 86. So I suppose you would say we weren't a spectacular family at all. But I hated school. I hated secondary school, absolutely loathed it.
Whereabouts?
In Hawera. I was living in Kaponga, and at Kaponga I went to primary school, rode a horse to school without a saddle, just a sack, and let him go in the football paddock and rode him home at night. And then I went to high school in Hawera. I had to catch the public bus. I think it left at 7 o'clock in the morning. Not sure. 7 or 8, I'm not too sure. Yeah. I had to ride a bike a mile and a half, and then catch that, and then that was an hour's journey into high school. So I left home very early, and I didn't get home till well after 5 at night.
So it was a long day.
It was a long day in a very, what I found, an unpleasant environment. My wife will disagree with that. She went to the same school. She loved it.
Is that where you were telling me the story before about one of the teachers?
No, that was in Manaia. Without a piece of paper that should pass some exams and what have you, is pretty hard. to earn a living.
So how many years did you have at secondary school?
Two. I left in the fourth form.
And was there a reason?
My mother got me a job in the local post office at Kaponga, and I worked there for a while. And then they moved to Partier and I followed them. And I worked in the, I was a postman there in Partier for a while, and then I got the stitch for that. It was the old school tie attitude in the post office, which I didn't like. So for a little while I was on for the local power board. It was a sort of a three-man gang, but that didn't suit me either. So that's when I went into the freezing works.
What age were you then?
I think I would have been 17.
Yeah. Which freezing works?
Partier. A whole soaking wet Levenstone, 17-year-old, working on a mutton chain, which was pretty hard work.
Very physical, I guess.
But a great gang of guys to work with. A lot of them are like a father figure to me. And I must say here, I'm certainly no racist, can't stand that, but the Maori guys that I worked with were tremendous. It's all I can say is they were tremendous guys. And I worked there in the freezing works, and I did various jobs there as well.
Who were you living with at that time?
My parents.
And any other siblings?
My other brother, one brother, my next brother up, he was at home.
Yeah.
All the rest, my sisters had gone nursing, and of course my brother was killed overseas, and my brother was in the Navy in Auckland, you know, out of Auckland. Yeah.
What was life like in Partier at that time?
Partier was a very good town to earn a living for people in the freezer works. And when I went to a social function, and this is well after that, I was in management team and what have you, I was asked where I worked, and I said, I work in the freezing works. And you could almost feel a curtain come down.
Can you tell me more about that? What was that about?
It's not socially acceptable, is all I can say. That was their attitude.
Yeah.
And really, when you investigated them, they didn't have a lot to be so proud about. Anyhow, we used to go to dances in those days, you know. That was a social activity. Never had to have security guards or anything like that. Basketball girls had put on a dance, and it was men 2 and 6, ladies a plate, and at half time at the dance you'd have a supper and cream cakes and the works. It was lovely. And you were quite safe. There was no, didn't seem to have any social problems in those days.
And were there plenty of people that went along to the
dances?
Oh
yeah, they were packed out. And that's where I met my wife.
At one of the dances?
Yes. At a town out of Partier called Kakramea. Yes, she had long left school, but she was a secretary in the freezing works at Partier, in management. And things progressed and we decided we would get married.
And what age were you then?
I got married when I was 24, so I would have been about 22, because in those days you were engaged for quite a while.
And you were working in the freezing works all that time?
Yep. We were married in the Anglican Church in Partier, and we had saved up our money, and we had gone up to Auckland, to Henderson, which is out of Auckland, and we organised to get what was a state advance loan in those days to get a house built. So we organised all that, then went back home, waited for it to get built, so it would be built in time for when we were married. That was in 29th of September 1956. So we have been married for 66 years. So we moved to Henderson, and I'd organised a job in a butcher shop up there, and I didn't like that at all. So I went back to the Westfield Freezing Works out of Otahu in Auckland.
What made you go to Henderson in the first place? Because it's quite a big shift from Partier.
We didn't want to stay in Partier and bring a family up in Partier. We wanted a broader horizon for them. Yeah, it's interesting. Anyhow,
Cliff has just been showing me photos of his wedding. How long after your wedding did you go to Henderson?
Straight away. Yes, we put our few possessions in a box wagon on the railway, and much to our disgust, so few possessions, it was pilfered.
So did you land up in Henderson very little?
They took what they wanted out of there, yeah.
And then you worked in the butcher?
I worked as a butcher there for a while. Then I went back to the freezing works, which was the environment that I understood and I didn't mind.
Yes.
The money was better as well.
What about your wife, Dale? What was she doing in the early days in Henderson?
Well, it was rather interesting because I'd saved up all this money and I said to her, you can get a job if you want to. If you don't want to, don't. And she didn't. She seemed to have a dream of, she just wanted to be a mother and a housewife. And she's a very talented person, a very talented person. Made our daughter's wedding frock. She could oil paint. Brilliant cook, although she hates it. And yeah, she's a very intelligent person.
How long after you moved did you have your first child?
9 months and 2 weeks afterwards.
Right. And what was the name of your first child?
Mark. Where the maternity home was, those days you went into a maternity home, was the Lawson Quinn's first home.
Ah.
It was a 10-bed maternity home.
Right.
And she was in there for 10 days and sat in the sun in the morning with hot buttered scones. Really quite a relaxed atmosphere, and the nurses and the sisters in there were like mothers to them because she was only 19, I think.
Yes, so a young
so
mum.
They were young. Mm, they were girls, 19. Yeah.
So that was Mark.
And then about a year later we had Catherine. The last one was much slower, but they were all about a year between them.
So there was Mark, then Catherine, then...
Kerry, the one at Clifton. And Shane, who now lives in Auckland still.
And are the others still in Hawke's Bay?
Mark lives in Broadbeach in Australia. Catherine lives out Middle Road. Kerry lives, well, he's out at Clifton and he lives at Haumoana. And Shane lives in Auckland on the North Shore. A lovely family.
Yes, it must be nice
having
most of them close.
Very good to us. Very good to us.
Can you tell me a little bit about your family life?
Well, we were pretty involved in the church in those days and made most of our friends in Auckland because when we went there, we didn't know a soul. Apart from a brother who was way over in Te Aritu, our neighbours on either side of us became our real friends. In fact, our kids today still call them auntie and uncle. That was a relationship. That was what it was like in those days. Lady on one side, she was like a mother figure to Dale, you know, advised her and all the rest of it. And if the kids got something wrong with them, you know, she was like a mother figure. Lovely people.
Hard without backup, isn't it? Without family backup.
Yeah. But then most of our friends were made through the church. And we weren't wowsers or, you know, hot gospelers. We were just normal church folk that you were in those days, which today is rather sad. We don't have anything to do with the church anymore at all. We're just totally disillusioned. We don't run them down or anything. We're just totally disillusioned.
So what school did your children go to?
Well, they went to the Henderson Primary. That's right. Well, this has an intricate part of it all. I worked at the works. Then finally, the union situation was that bad. I never knew whether I was going to earn a living or not because they would just stop work all the time. So I left there and I was working in butcher shops. Well, it's a, sort of a mini supermarket, put it that way. And then my sister, who was living in Palmerston North, was up in Auckland visiting. So this Sunday I said to my children, would you like to go out and see Auntie Nolene off on the aeroplane and watch the big planes? You know what kids are like. Didn't know whether they were going to go or not. But anyway, we went out there, and then as the plane had taken off and we were walking out, I ran into an old boss of mine. And I said, "Hello, Jack." I said, "I suppose you're retired." He said, "No, I can't retire. They can't find somebody to replace me." And this is a remarkable part of my story. It was really, when you think about it, I'd shudder. He said, "Oh, well, I'd better talk to Tony Holland," who was the general manager of Westfield. Now, Westfield was a huge place, a massive. I got lost the first day. Couldn't find my way back to my lunchroom. It's that big. Anyhow, he said, I'll mention it to Tony Holland. If he's interested, he can give you a ring. I said, "Yeah, okay, if you want to." So I went back to work. And then a week later, the following Friday, I'd just come home. I used to come home Friday night for my dinner and then go back and clean all the cabinets out for the weekend. And the phone went, was Tony Holland. He said, "I think you might be interested in a job out here, Cliff." I said, "Oh, yeah, it could be." He said, "Well, how about you come out and see me soon?" Went out and saw him. And he said, "We're introducing a new system of boning meat." And he says, "It's the first one in New Zealand. And he's looking for somebody to run it." He said, "I'll offer you the job." And he said, "You'll get plenty of help and all the rest of it." Now, I had run a butcher shop with two people that I'd been in charge of, that's all. But this one, I don't know. They probably had about 250 people that I was in charge of. Anyhow, I was given the systems that they were going to put in and read up about them and all the rest of it. So on the 10th of July 1967, Decimal Currency Day, I put on my first, what we call the white coat in Westfield. And the first utterance from the union delegate was that he was going to bury me. I would never survive. They were bitter, nasty people. I just bided the time and then I discussed it all. And then eventually I was told that the big boss from Wellington was coming up and he wanted to see the systems. He and all his cohorts were with him. It was like a real entourage. And here I was, miserable Cliff Brannigan, had to put on a demonstration, which I did. He was very friendly. He was very nice. He said to me, "Which system do you like, Cliff?" I told him. He said, "Why?" And I told him. And he turned to Tony Holland and said, "Put it in." You know, I couldn't believe it. Boy, it had to succeed because I think in those days, it was in 67, it was worth $3 million. So I had to get hold of all these guys that had been working there in the old system and told them that I don't want them to do any more or any less than I tell them.
So you were taking charge?
Very much so. The union, for the first month, they never worked a full day. For a month, it's went on. Until finally, I think some people got some brains and said that was not good enough. That turned out to be a huge success. They made far more money because the system was far cleaner and more productive. And we used to bone hundreds of bodies of beef a day. There was six systems in the room. And then they put on another two down below. I was in charge of it all. I'd never been past the fourth floor. I had no experience of managing people or anything.
But you developed those skills over time.
Well, it was rather interesting. When I look back, I'm not trying to be melodramatic or anything. When I look back, I had a very lonely childhood and relied on myself. I didn't sort of rely on anybody else because I was 4 years younger than my next brother up. And nobody was interested in. I couldn't go to school on the weekends to play any sport or go to any functions because I couldn't get there. So I was a loner and pretty independent. And I think that's what came out, frankly.
In that role?
Yeah. I introduced systems that they had right until they'd finished, you know, and it was all so simple and ran just like clockwork and Everybody knew what was going on and all the rest of it. And just to take a break, that's my 90th birthday card from my wife, and that's some of the gardens that I had. That was in Auckland.
In Henderson?
No, that was when I went to Auckland. That was after I'd finished working with Graham Lowe. And that's the house at Waramata and Warkworth. So I've been around.
Yes. So tell me about Warkworth and Waramata. Are they places that you owned?
We lived there, yes, we bought them, had them built. We've had six new houses.
So when did you move from Henderson?
Well, I'm coming to that. So the system in Auckland was very successful. And then one day the boss said to me, come down. I became a very special person, and I say that in all modesty, in that freezing works, because it ran so well and it ran so smoothly and it was so productive. Anyhow, Tony Holland, who originally hired me, got me to come down to his office. I went down there and he said, I want you to go to Massey University to a course, Meat Technology. I said, oh yeah, okay. Well, just forget how long I went there for. Quite a while, save a month, I think. And Dale and I never liked being apart, obviously. And of course, she had the four kids to manage on her own. Anyhow, I went down there to Massey University. And, you know, I'd only been to the fourth form, remember? And I sat in there and the first lecture came up. And I said to the person next door to me, I said, is this the meat technology? He said, yeah. I didn't understand what they were talking about because they had started off on first year university stuff. I'd never even heard of it, which I thought was a bit stupid, frankly. But however, I got back after it was sort of over. Tony Holland said to me, well, how'd you get on, Cliff? I said, well, I gave it my best shot. But I said, I don't think I did very well. He said, that doesn't matter. He said, I just wanted to wake your brain up, that's all. I said, thanks very much. Because here I was sweating at night till 11 or 12 o'clock trying to make sense of all this stuff.
Yeah.
So then I went back into my job and then the next thing he rang up again and he said, I want you to go down to Hastings, to Tomona.
What year was that?
70. Yes, 70. Late 70. And he said, they're looking for a new assistant works manager and they want to interview you. So I came down to Tomona and Gordon Taylor was the general manager, Lou Stewart was the works manager, and yes, they decided to hire me. I don't think Lou Stewart was very keen. Anyhow, so in 1971, we packed up in Partia. Dale had a cry because that was where her family were all born, and this is a necessity of earning a living.
How did you feel about coming down?
Well, I was excited about it. Anyhow, we came down here and brought the kids down here. My eldest son went to the boys' high school straight away, Mark. And this little kid at the third form went to the first 11 cricket team straight away. Anyhow, we bought a house that Jeff Treacher had built in Poplar Place off Willow Park Road, backing onto Akina Park. And we all settled in there.
So the children settled at school, okay? Well,
Mark went to high school. Catherine went to Caribou. Kerry was going to primary school. And so was Shane, yes.
And what was your role at Tomona?
Assistant Works Manager. They gave me the difficult things to do. Anyhow, Lou Stewart, the Works Manager, his interpretation was, he said, I wanted an assistant works manager and they gave me a boner. That was his attitude. But we became very, very close friends.
You and the assistant manager?
No, I was the assistant works manager. Oh. Lou Stewart was the works manager. So I was there for quite a while and then Pacific Freezing Works started to get built. And I had been overlooked as works manager at Tomona. Lou Stewart went over to Partia Works and they brought Alan Edwards from head office in Wellington up and made him the works manager and I was overlooked. Anyhow, I had my eye on Pacific freezing. So to cut a long story short, it's about 1974, I think it was. I took that on. I applied for that. I got the job as works manager. And it was quite an interesting situation because it was owned by two different companies. One was Graham Lowe's Dawn Meat, and the other one was Richmond Farmers Co-op, I think it's called. You know, I was walking the tightrope between the two companies. But, however, it turned out to be a huge success. And the relationship of the people working there and myself was just fantastic. They were fantastic people, but they were given a chance. They were listened to. They were talked to. They were understood. Because I had spent most of my life in the freezing works, I knew what it was like. So I was there until, I don't know, and then the company decided that they needed a freezing works to kill mutton. They decided they would build one in Dannevirke. So I was given the job to get that done.
What, to oversee the build, you mean?
Yeah. Just to, you know, keep the pressure on them. Because Waikato had been building in works, which is still there at Takapau, up the road. And they wanted to, you know, challenge them to be ready the same time, which was a pretty big ask. However, and I won't go into any more, but the works was called O'Ringi, and at O'Ringi it was a rather, it was not very good, put it that way. I didn't agree with what was going on at all. So I got fed up with it in the finish and resigned. And Mum and I went up to Auckland, and we bought a coffee shop in Auckland.
You and Dale. So you moved from Hawke's Bay back up to Auckland.
Yeah, see, from Poplar Place we went down to Dannevirke, and we built a place on the land adjacent to the works, which was a lovely place.
So how long were you in Dannevirke?
Probably 2 or 3 years, or something like that.
And whereabouts did you buy the coffee shop?
Right in the centre of the city. Boy, oh boy, that was an education. Pretty hard work.
What year was that, Cliff?
I can't remember, to be perfectly honest.
And did the family go with you?
No, it was only Dale and I. We were on our own.
That would have been hard work. Long hours?
Yes, very.
And where were you living?
In Titirangi, up in the ranges. And we travelled into the city each day. Like, we were there at 5 o'clock in the morning. So we sold that, and of all jobs, I got a job as a caretaker at a primary school. And I really enjoyed that job. I thought it was lovely, but you couldn't live on the wages.
Which primary school was that? Out Titirangi Way?
Yes. Oh, I've forgotten the name of it. My memory's not the best. Yeah, and I sold real estate for a while, and as soon as I took that on, the real estate market just stopped.
Oh, that was unfortunate.
Anyhow, I got a phone call one day from a person who owned a freezing works at Tikawata out of Auckland, and they were going broke, and they wanted somebody to, you know, try and pull them out of the cart. So I went down there. I travelled from Auckland each day, and eventually we moved down there. But the dairy wouldn't even give them credit for a bottle of milk. But it was just poorly managed, that's all it was. So I pulled them out of the cart, and that's right. It was a horse factory, and you killed horses 1 week, and then the rest of the time you killed beef. But when I went there, they were not doing very much of anything.
So how long were you managing management role there?
Probably about 2 or 3 years, I don't know. And then, that's right, they decided they were going to sell that. They wanted to develop a works over Tamanui Way. And I kept running into accountants who believed they knew all about running a freezing works, which they didn't, and making stupid, you know, decisions. Anyhow, they went over to Tamanui, and the boss's son, again, he was supposed to be the brains and all the rest of it, and how he was going to rebuild this place and run it all in. Never knew what the hell he was doing. So I got sick of this and I just retired, full stop.
So did you go to Tamanui?
Yep. I'd travelled there. I lived there during the week and came home on the weekends. Oh, at that stage, we were living in Warkworth.
It's quite a way, isn't it?
Mm, each weekend. So that's about my work life, but really it's a life of earning and living the best way you can.
So what age were you when you retired?
60.
And you stayed in Warkworth?
Yes, I stayed living in Warkworth. And then Auckland found Warkworth. And when Auckland finds something that's just gone to... It was a lovely little village when we went there, but it just ended up queues of traffic. So we went down to Whangamatar, and we bought a section there and built a house in Whangamatar.
You've built a lot of houses, haven't you?
Yes, that's what I say. Henderson was a new house. Poplar Place at Hastings was a new house. O'Ringi was a new house. We came back to Auckland. Yes, Warkworth was a new house. Whangamatar was a new house. And where we lived in Harpooker Street was a new house. Because, again, this is managing your finances. I believed that you're better off to build a house than buy one that's already built, because you can guarantee something will need fixing or painting or something. Whereas you build a new house, you've got 7 years before you have to do anything.
So did you build in Harpooker when you first came back to Hawke's Bay?
Yes, we rented a little flat in Hastings. Peritonga Street. What's the next one over?
Queen?
No, the other way.
Eastbourne?
Eastbourne, yes. So we sold the place in Whangamatar, and at that stage I had good health. And what made us come back here was that some of the family was here, because I felt that if anything happened to me in Whangamatar, Dar was on her own. So we sold and moved down here. And I loved the house in Hastings. As you can see, everywhere I lived, I had a garden, because I loved gardening. And I had a lovely garden in Harpooker Street. It was a lovely garden. People used to stop and come in and look at it. Yeah. Which made me feel proud.
So was that flower gardens and vegetable gardens? No.
I had a lovely log fire, and I used to go out and cut my own firewood out on the daughter and son-in-law's farm. But when we moved in here and I left there, I sound a bit of a sissy, but I don't mind admitting I shed a tear when I left there. I loved that house. It was the most convenient house I've ever lived in my life.
Was that your favourite house?
Yes.
What year did you leave that house to come here, Cliff?
A year ago.
Oh, so you've been here a year. So you would have been in Harpooker Street quite some time.
20 years, near enough. Or 19 and a half or something like that, yeah.
Yeah. And how have you found your retirement years?
Frustrating.
Can you tell me more about that?
Well, I've always been a person to do things, and I've never been a scholar, put it that way, but I've been practical. Yeah. In fact, Dale said if she was stranded on a desert island, the one person she'd want to be with was me, because I'm practical. But, you know, I built things myself and did things myself. And here again, coming back to this independence, I relied on myself. And that's where my early life comes into focus. I was a little boy who became lonely. And, you know, when I was going to primary school, mainly from 1942 on, I was quite a lonely little boy. And even, you know, my first job in Kapunga in the post office, I was 15 and I was boarding and had to fend for myself. So all that sort of independence comes out. I feel it comes out in my life.
And now as well?
Yeah. I haven't got... Well, of course, most of my friends and relations are dead, because I am 91. But put it this way, it was a necessary decision. It was my kids who got me to do it. They talked to us, because now it's degenerating, so am I. And at least here we have the opportunity of going into further care. And we're getting used to it and more accepting of it than what we were.
Well, it's a big change, isn't it?
Well, you're going from a three-bedroom house to a two-roomed apartment.
And there's a lot that you have to give away before you move.
Well, you have to give away half your life. Yeah. You know, things that were precious to us. Even, I don't care admitting, you know, all my old tools and all that sort of thing. I gave my son my trailer and my chainsaws and all that sort of stuff.
It's a huge transition.
That's not very nice, actually. But no, well, I think it was the right decision. That doesn't mean to say that I have to like it.
No, no, but you're coming to that acceptance. Do you see your family a lot?
See daughter and a son who live here, yeah. See them quite often. We were out at Kerry's Cafe yesterday. He's a remarkable boy. Well, they all are, really.
All doing different things.
My eldest son has been over in France touring around for a month.
Holiday?
For a month.
So you haven't told me about grandchildren.
Oh, yeah. Kathy's got two, Todd, and this is an interesting feature. Patrick Brannigan came out, as I said, in the British Army from Ireland. And cut a long story short, he settled in Alfreton. My grandson, Todd, met a girl down the South Island whose family had a farm in Alfreton, and I'm cutting a lot of years off, which they bought off the family. And that's where Patrick Brannigan settled when he came out to New Zealand.
Amazing.
So that's gone right round the circle. And my grandson has three girls.
So that's Todd.
Two girls and a boy.
So you've got three great-grandchildren there. Todd is one of Catherine's children, and Nicola is her daughter.
Yeah. And she has two boys, Harry and Lockie. So that's five great-grandchildren. My son, Mark, his wife, Julie, has two children, a boy and a girl. And their son, Jeffrey, has one child. So we've got eight great-grandchildren.
You've mentioned two of your children. What about the youngest two? Have they got family?
That's right. Kerry out at Clifton. His son, Joshua, has one boy. So that's another great-grandchild. Kerry's other two boys, my mind goes blank every now and again.
Ned and George.
George is a downhill mountain biker. He's not married. And Ned, I don't know, he does filming and things. And he's not married.
So that's nine great-grandchildren altogether. So, Cliff, I'm wondering if there's anything else that you want to share with me before we finish.
Not really, no. I can't think of anything more.
Well, thank you very much for what you've shared.
Well, it's really a story of making a living where you can. Would you say that, Dale?
You've never been afraid of hard work, that's for sure.
But I say, our married life really has been earning a living where you can. And it hasn't been easy, but I don't know whether I would change it because I'm no scholar and I don't want to be one. It's like cell phones. I don't like cell phones. I haven't got one and I don't want one.
Fair enough too. Well, that's probably a good place to leave it, Cliff. Okay, thank you very much.